Episode 263.
What people need help with is after the customer says no. So what do you do? I say, my philosophy is, as a salesperson, you will define yourself as a salesperson by what you do after the customer says no. And we're never going to be high pressure salespeople.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hey, welcome, aftermarket professionals throughout North America and around the world, to episode 263 of Remarkable Results Radio. Hey, you know that if we were void of the quality work our service advisors do, we would have a lot less work to process in the shop. My guest, Jason Servideo, is all about creating an automotive sales culture at the service counter without any high-pressure selling. Prepare to get some powerful insights on sales advisor training. Hey, Carm Capriato here. Welcome aboard to tell you that the Aftermarket's premier podcast is supported by Federal Mogul Motor Parts. They are the reason you enjoy these great aftermarket interviews. When you need innovation and quality, you need Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Brands like Moog, Felpro, Wagner Brake, ANCO, Champion, Seal Power, FP Diesel, and a lot more. They're the parts techs trust. Find out more at fmmotorparts.com, and thank you for supporting these brands. Hey, I'd love to welcome new Facebook friends Luis Baez, Brian Bates, and Mark Wendt, and to my new LinkedIn connections, Tommy DeWitt, Shane Jones, and Mike Reynolds. Hey, thanks so much for connecting and getting involved in this powerful educational resource. Hey, don't hesitate to connect with the podcast. For every one of my social links, go to remarkableresults.biz/social. Hey, thanks for tuning into the Town Hall Academy, the single subject forums broadcast live at 12 noon Eastern every Friday. We'll find every repurposed episode in the Academy Toolbox on my website or on your listening subscription service. Hey, thanks for using the Remarkable Results Radio listening app. You get an MP3 player, my guest's picture, and a synopsis of the episode right to your smartphone. Get the app at your app store or find the links at remarkableresults.biz/app. That's APP. Hey, now meet Jason Servideo, Vice President of Transformers Mastermind. Jason is a sales trainer, and I got to pick his brain and get some details on the service advisor position, an extremely important and very critical position for every professional shop today. Jason shares the makeup of top service advisor, explains where the best service advisors come from, and how to measure the value of service advisor training. He's a ball of energy and excitement. This interview will fly by, so if you don't have a chance to take any notes, as you know, they're already done for you at Jason Servideo's show notes page at remarkableresults.biz/E263. He shares some great wisdom from his years of being a service advisor and a sales trainer. You'll learn some of Jason's best training points, like no one ever died selling and what happens when the customer says no. Get ready for your dose of sales training strategies and a few special tactics. You'll be so glad you invested your personal time. Now, here we go with Jason Servideo. Hey, a warm welcome to Jason Servideo, the Vice President of Transformers Institute from Colorado Springs, Colorado. Welcome, Jason.
Hey, how you doing, Carm? Thanks for having me.
There's so much to talk about. I just can't wait to get in it because, you know, everyone knows we always have a pre-call and I find out stuff about my guest and we can, you know, get to it here in a minute. But I heard that you started with your uncle as a tech in his shop and you became an ASE certified technician. And then you found your passion and success as a service advisor.
That's right. I was actually introduced to that side of it just from being in a small shop, you know, fixing the car and selling the jobs, and kind of learned that I could sell the jobs really, really well. And, you know, as I went forward and got other jobs, I always, you know, I never went back to technician. I did that for a few years, but I'll be honest, I was an average technician at best. What I really like doing is, talking with people. And thank God, you know, my dad, great influence on me, was in sales all his life. Just an incredible salesperson. And he was a little disappointed when I told him I wanted to become a mechanic. You know, I saw it in his eyes. We don't like that. You know, he wanted me to be a lawyer, be in sales, something like that. Of course, the dad has high ambition. But he taught me a valuable lesson. He said, you know, whether you're going to get into a profession that is seems like a high-end profession or a low-end profession, whether you go to college, don't go to college, all that matters is that whatever you do, you have to be better than everybody else doing it. And that's the key to be successful. So he says, if you want to be a mechanic, I'll support you, but you need to do it right. You need to get a modern education in automotive technology. I'm going to help you, you know. And he did. He sent me to a technical school. I got an associate's degree in automotive technology, combined with kind of what I was already doing and what I already knew. But I'll be honest, even after my degree, I went right into service advising. I just loved it, and it gave me just a little bit more technical knowledge that helps. But my real passion was for sales, and I actually bounced in and out of automotive several times into other professions where I was mainly a salesman. You know, the home improvement industry, siding, windows, gutter, roofing. I really enjoyed that and was quite successful. So kind of, I would say my claim to fame is that I took a lot of techniques that I learned in kind of high-end sales. You know, you might be selling someone $20,000 worth of windows, and bringing those techniques to automotive, because that's the one thing missing in automotive is we tend to be like cavemen the way we sell.
I love that quote. Explain that a little deeper. We tend to be cavemen.
I saw it a million times when I would be in the shop. You know, basically, yeah, see this leak right here? That's your rack and pinion. It controls your steering. It needs to be replaced. It's $1,400. Can have it done 4 days from now. You want to do it? And the customer would be like, no, right?
No, let it leak. Let it leak.
Yeah. You know, there's some basic sales techniques that are common all over the world that are completely missing in automotive.
Oh, wait a minute. So I get what you mean. I mean, we're really just, you know, cavemen, we're saying, yep, no. Hungry, food, icy. We're very short and to the point.
Yeah, and whoever teaches us actual sales techniques and sales skills, you know? I have a thing I teach in one of my classes called No One Died Selling. And all that means is nobody died today. It's not bad news. Don't act like it. And that literally came from another colleague I had years ago that maybe a guy came in for brakes and he just thought he needed the, you know, $139 brake job or whatever. And oh, it needs rotors. And the service advisor would go sit next to him and say, I am so sorry. It's not just the brakes. It needs the rotors and they're so expensive. And now it's going to be $400 and I'm so sorry. And I'd be watching him like, I can't believe this. You know, it's not bad news that a car needs rotors. It's great news. Right? Nobody died today. Don't act like it. And I would tell him this, and I would show him an alternative, and it really helped him. You know, putting value into a sales pitch. It's a sales pitch. It's not explaining the job. It's a sales pitch. Learning to close the sale. You have to actually ask for the business, right? Just some basic things. And I had a real, real passion for that. And yeah, so when I say we're cavemen, I still see it all over. I mean, we're getting better, but we take a really technical-minded, knowledgeable person, and we say, "Okay, now go sell." Well, that's not always the best thing. You know, I just got back from the Ratchet and Wrench conference in Chicago. It was phenomenal, and met people from all over the spectrum. But I'll tell you, a trend, and I'm glad about the trend, is more and more people are hiring great personality, sales educated front person, like calling them a customer service rep or all different names. So you kind of deal with that person before you get to the service advisor or the mechanic. And they're able to pull a lot more people in off the phone and develop relationships. And it's surprising how little they need to know about the actual car.
Got it. So we're talking from outside the industry. Let's find them, bring them in, and then they would go to a person like you to be trained.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's one thing with, you know, my tenure at Aspen Auto Clinic, I did that quite successfully, is recruited a lot of people from either outside the industry or somewhere in the industry you wouldn't think of. You know, I don't want to mention any names, but, you know, one of our most successful service advisors in the company, I recruited him from a pizza restaurant. And he had all the intangibles, the things you could never teach. He was very smart, amazing personality, very articulate, but he knew nothing about cars.
So I hear that a lot. What are you looking for in certain qualities?
I'm looking for passion. I'm looking for enthusiastic personalities, voice inflection, intelligence, being able to articulate a complicated point. You'll learn about cars. I mean, if you really break it down, I mean, I don't want to oversimplify it, but we sell about the same 12 things all week, right? You know, you can learn about just enough technical knowledge to get started. What I like about taking someone from outside the industry is I can teach them that your sales abilities and your customer service abilities and your relation building capabilities are actually more important than the technical. You know, taking someone that's been writing service all their lives, sometimes they have a hard time understanding that.
I'm talking with Anthony Frohwein, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Anthony, when you're in a shop, are you talking tech as well as product?
Whenever I do a physical training, there is product incorporated part of the whole training overall, but it's to maximize the time, whether it's diagnostics, whether it's inspection, whether it's installation. So that way they understand that, hey, by skipping that extra 20 seconds by putting on this set of brake pads and not replacing the hardware, hey, this might be the reason why that I'm getting comebacks. And usually being a ex-shop owner, I understand that the first time you get paid, the second time's free.
And so are the techs really starving for this information?
Oh, absolutely. A lot of times you have, we live in an industry where I like to say they cut the roast in half and they don't understand why, but they do it just because they've always been doing it type of an industry. So, you know, to break it through that, they've been doing something for 30 years and they see as they haven't been doing anything wrong, but it starts to open up their eyes to, hey, you know what? It wasn't necessarily wrong, but there is a better way.
So you're really talking to me about an aha moment.
Exactly.
And tell me, when you see that happening more and more from technicians that you're out with, how does it make you feel?
Oh, it's awesome. I mean, you really feel like you're giving back to the community overall. But ultimately, the way I tell them, you know, I look at every single vehicle that I worked on prior to, or I had my customer, just like I put my family in that vehicle, I look at it as I'm keeping everybody else that much safer because the job's getting done correctly.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. It goes without saying, you've been in the industry. You are now working for Transformers Institute with Greg Bunch doing his sales training for that group. And so it goes without saying that sales training is critically important for the service professional. Any great examples? You've seen the before and the after stuff work?
That's one thing that we've done well at Aspen. Even though I was the vice president of Aspen Auto Clinic, my primary job was sales training. All the new employees, the current managers and service advisors. Yeah, and we never just trained someone and wondered if it worked. We watched their numbers before and after. And that is really a lot of fun. You see immediate results. And it depends on what we're training for. We train for two big things.
You do it along with the service advisor. I mean, they're engaged with the measurement themselves, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we publish it. We publish the data. It's a friendly competition among service advisors, you know, for the whole company. We have five stores. And run somebody through our all-day class. We have a class called Raising Your ARO Through Superior Sales Techniques. It's not about systems and operations. It's about how to talk to people. That's what's missing. And watch that. And sometimes we would do these classes one-on-one or just two service advisors, right? Just within the company. And their ARO would shoot right up. The other big thing we train for, you know, conversion rate on the phone. Some software out there, Kukui comes right to mind, has dynamite systems where they can measure your your conversion rate, right? So they can match the phone number that called to an open ticket in Mitchell or whatever software you're using. And I'm not sure what's normal for the industry, but I've talked to a lot of people that are jazzed if they're around 40%. We got ours to 86% through our phone class, and that's another all day. You know, if we're looking for conversion rate, we run people through the phone class, then we measure it and we look. And it doesn't stick forever, I'm not going to lie, because you see instant results and then it kind of settles back down a little bit. And then we wait a little bit and we run them back through, you know. So I have seen a lot of before and after.
So the key is perpetual type of training.
Yes. I actually learned that from Greg. We have this running joke between him and I, because I started off as a service advisor for Aspen and working for Greg. And he wanted me to move from that. I got a nice promotion to corporate, and he just wanted me to be Aspen's sales trainer, which I did for years. It was a lot of fun. We had this joke because I said, Greg, you know, I'll do this for, you know, 6 months or so, and I'm going to train everybody in the company really, really well, but I'm going to run out of things to train, and then I'm going to have to go back to writing service. And he just laughed. I was dead serious. He knew, you know, you're never going to run out of things because you have to run them back through. You have to reinforce. And I was naive. You know, I literally thought, look, I'm going to tell them what I know, teach them how I used to do it, teach them all these things that you want them to be better at, and then I'll be done. You know, that. So, and here we are 7 years later still doing it. So,
love it. Great story and good stuff so far. Thanks. I think about the telephone and how critical the telephone is for our survival in our industry. I also think about the customer that really does call, has an appointment, comes in, and then you find some additional things. Are those two types of sales different or are they the same?
In some ways, they're the same. I mean, you're always going to talk to someone about their primary concern first. But one thing that we probably do things a little bit different is I believe in counter sales. And I know that that's a bad way of saying it, but sometimes that's just simply preparing a customer and explaining to them what the process is and what your business model is beforehand. And so we're not going to take someone's primary concern in and tell them about it and then say, oh, and by the way, we found all these other things, right? That's what a lot of people do, and it locks up the customer. I'm in for an alignment and I noticed you pop my hood. How dare you? Why are you in my hood? I didn't ask you to go under there. We explain at the counter that we do a free courtesy inspection on every vehicle. We do it for free, but we explain why we do it, right? Because could you imagine if you came in and you did a $1,500 rack and pinion and there was another $1,500 repair a month away and we could have told you about it, maybe it would have changed your decision on doing the rack and pinion. Maybe you would have done it all at once. Maybe you would have never done the rack and pinion. But it's our obligation to at least tell you.
The safety piece is one of the biggest parts.
Absolutely. So no, we do have pretty good systems and processes laid out, sales systems. I mean, we have a bona fide sales system. You know, Greg always says, you know, if you can find a successful company out there that has no sales system, I'll be shocked. And he's right that they don't exist. So, you know, we have a process for when they come in for an oil change. We have a separate training that we do, Carm, for, we call it expansion and maximization, right? So they're in for a primary concern. Maybe the water pump's leaking, but are you serving that customer well by telling them, okay, we're going to do the water pump and a gallon of coolant? And not tell them about the hoses that have 125,000 miles on them, the thermostat that should be done, the struts that are completely worn out. You know, we're going to expand and maximize the sale, but we're going to do it in the customer's best interest. So we have a separate process for those things.
How do you find out where any of your service advisors need help in?
Years ago, when I was the sales trainer, and even when I became kind of the sales manager, I could flat out ask a service advisor, what are you weak in? What do you think if there was one or two services or even repairs that you see typically that you could sell better to increase your commission, what are they and why do you think they're bad at? Why do you think you're bad at them? They would just tell me everything. What I noticed is kind of when I continued to get promoted and kind of became their direct boss, those answers didn't come as easy. So it was harder for me to find their weaknesses. And I think I had respect of all the people, and when you mainly manage through training, like I did, I believe in being a servant leader and helping people make more money. And you get a lot of respect and you can influence and you can get people to do things pretty easily. You can't get them to admit their weaknesses as easy. So the answer to your question is I found out through listening to their phone calls. I've listened to thousands upon thousands of recorded phone calls. But and then I could kind of find out where they're weak and tell them. But if I could just give you a quick story to highlight this, I told you I just got back from the Ratchet and Wrench conference. And obviously, I was having some really fun conversations with service advisors and owners and managers. There was all kinds of people there. But here's an exact example of what I'm saying. So I'm talking to a young lady, service advisor back on the East Coast there. And she was pretty interested in some of the classes that I do. And she was asking me, what are some key points, like what are some topics, some subjects, what do you do? And I was kind of going through the list, and what she was most fascinated with was, you know, the ARO. And, you know, what I found is I don't really need to teach you how to sell a rack and pinion, how to sell a ball joint, how to sell a power steering flush, how to sell a belt. Most people come up with pretty good descriptions and ways to sell it. What people need help with is after the customer says no. So What do you do? I say my philosophy is as a salesperson, you will define yourself as a salesperson by what you do after the customer says no. And we're never going to be high pressure salespeople. So how can we talk to them without being high pressure? Because half the people say no at first, right? So I was getting into that a little bit and she said, oh my God, that is exactly what I need. I've got a part of the class is, you know, turning into a puddle of goo. Anyone that knows me hears me say that all the time. When the customer says no, do you turn into a puddle of goo and flow away to the lowest spot on the floor, or do you have a way to continue? And she said, I'm that person that turns into a puddle of goo. I don't know what to do. I get very uncomfortable. I go print the estimate and I get them out of there as fast as possible. I said, well, I could really, really help you with that. And she got really excited. If I was her boss, I doubt she would have told me that. And that highlighted it to me better than ever. So I'm kind of excited to get back and be a sales trainer and not necessarily be everybody's boss. A lot of times their weaknesses are their perceived weaknesses. They're not even weaknesses. But if they'll just share it with me, why they think they're not good at it, I can usually help them.
Give me the first pointer when someone says no, so that I don't turn into a puddle of goo. The first thing, I mean, without giving your whole class away.
It kind of depends on why. I guess the first pointer is to find out absolutely why. And even though they may not say the real reason, we know it's almost always price. But we call it refocusing the customer. They're not thinking about the proper things. I'll just give you an example. If you did come in for the water pump, and a gallon of coolant, and you wanted bare minimum, and I'm trying to add maybe the heater hoses and the upper and lower radiator hoses because they're soft and they have 125,000, and you're thinking, no, that makes it a little bit too expensive. I think I'll just do this other repair, and you're saying no to it. I'm not going to pressure you, but I might say something, Carm, just real quick, do you know when most people replace their radiator hoses? And I'm just going to wait. I'm going to say, you know, I do this for a living. I see it winter in, winter out. Please use my experience as a resource and be more proactive than my other customers. Most customers replace their heater hoses when they blow, when they leak, and then they overheat their all aluminum engine for the second time. We're getting into the danger zone.
And you're on the side of the road. And it's late at night.
And most people, when you say that to them, they, you know, they think for a minute, they smile and they say, oh, you're right. Let's just go ahead.
I love what you just said. And some guests recently on the show have said, Carm, we as service professionals need to provide insights to our customers. Was that an insight?
Absolutely. That's insight. Nobody wants to say, you know, you're going to die. You're going to have all these terrible consequences. You have to say it in a gentle way. There's a big difference between an experienced customer and an experienced professional service advisor. I remind my guys of that all the time because we all get these intimidating guys that come in and try to act like they know as much as us, right? Maybe you are experienced and you bought four or five timing belts over your lifetime. Well, we've project managed and sold four or five this week. So we like to say, use our experience as a resource. We see this all the time. You know, here's what can happen. And usually I like to relate it to more not you're going to die, something's going to come apart, but you're going to cost yourself more money. The biggest difference between explaining an automotive service and a sales pitch is that a sales pitch is provocative. Whatever I say has to be provocative in some way. If I tell you that your battery is a little bit weak and you don't want to do it yet, and I can refocus you by saying, Carm, you know when most people actually replace their battery? We see it every winter this time of year. And just let the customer talk. And they'll do just that. They'll say, yeah, when it's dead, I had to get jump started a few years ago.
So anyone who may come in that's got internet knowledge, you're really trying to pull that out of them? You're telling someone, hey, you know, you've studied this. You know how batteries fail at the most inopportune time. It's 4 years old now. You've done the research, haven't you, Bob?
Absolutely. Yeah, we encourage that. We're not afraid of people that come in educated. We actually laugh about it a lot. We have one shop that is Euro only up in Denver, run by a wonderful young lady that started with us years ago when she was very young. Moved all the way up to store manager. She's just killing it up there. You know, everyone says, well, we love dealing with European drivers, but they have the money to buy what we're selling, but they're difficult to sell because they do come in very educated. They may go on a forum for 3-4 hours before they come see you because their car is not a tool. They're an enthusiast for their car, which I actually like. But the relationship might start out with they lay a throttle position sensor on the counter and say, I got a code. I got my own code reader. It's a throttle position code. I bought a throttle position sensor and I want you to put it on, right? That's a pretty tough conversation to have. So we don't mind that you're educated. You're educated in what the car may need, but you're not educated in the proper professional way to fix a car. So that's where we'll back up.
Let's talk about this great career as a service advisor in our industry. Have you ever had a chance to talk to counselors, PTAs, you know, the parent groups at the high schools to consider? You know, we talk about the tech shortage and wanting to seed our industry with great young STEM-type students. It sure looks like someone who doesn't want to work with their hands but loves people could find a hell of a career with us.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And I haven't done a lot of that. Our operations manager, Bill, at Aspen Auto Clinic has done a lot of that. He has a passion for that as well. And our district manager, Mike, is starting to do some of that. They've actually gone into the schools and they're developing relationships with a lot of the shop teachers, and they've innovated some training programs within our company. But I would like to do that because I'll tell you, a lot of young people don't even know it's a career, right? They don't even, I don't know about cars. That means I can't get into that. That whole industry is hands off, and that's not true. My passion is for sales and training salespeople and showing them what's possible, what a great lifestyle you can have. It's not like it used to be. We're not going to make you work 78 hours a week. That was big for me at Aspen, is I wanted to create a sales culture, not an automotive culture, right? Internally amongst the service advisors. And I wanted to treat them like professional salespeople. With commission and really good pay. I love being able to show a young person that is just getting their eyes open to this, that learning sales and customer service really, really well in the automotive industry is an absolute replacement for college, right? College isn't for everybody. And if you don't want to go to college, a top salesperson will have the same income as somebody with a bachelor's or even a master's degree. And I learned that from my dad as well. I love showing them that that's possible. And I love seeing a service advisor go from thinking that it's about cars to understanding that it's about people, helping people, personal relationships with people, and then making an income that they never thought possible. I've seen people go from $9 an hour struggling, can't even afford their apartment, have a baby, not know what they're going to do, to, you know, being able to put money away, buy a house over just a few years of writing service. It's really rewarding.
Great. Good for you. Glad to hear that. Jason, is there any downtime in a service advisor's day? And if there is, what would you ask them to do?
Have a tickler file and call back customers that you felt like you were very close to almost getting the sale, but at the last minute, something happened that maybe you don't know why you missed it. So that and follow up. How many customers get a follow-up call, right? If you spent $1,500 on a rack and pinion and an alignment with me. And I called you 3 days later and said, hey, Carm, how does that alignment feel? How are things going for you? Just wanted to follow up, make sure everything was still good. You know, that's a great way to spend downtime. Somebody that maybe did do an oil change, but we recommended shocks and they didn't want to do the shocks yet. Call them in a week. Maybe there's a special going on. Maybe there's something we can do for them. Stay in contact with your customers. We were talking about the phone, you know, listen to the phone. And I got to just insert this real quick if it's okay. But this is what kills me. Being with Greg, he's an open book and he's treated me more like a partner than an employee over the years. He's just been wonderful to me. Most people that work for him are all going to tell you that. But I, you know, going from a service advisor up to corporate, I got to see the whole other side of things that I never saw before. And the first thing I saw is the amazing amount of money that is spent on marketing and getting new customers and getting more customers, more customers, more customers. And then you listen to the phone and wow, you could be losing 40, 50, 60% of the customers that are calling you. You're not getting their car in the bay, but you're still continuing to spend all of this money. Why are we doing that? Why not do some phone training, tighten up our phone skills, measure our conversion rate? You know, if you have an 86% conversion rate and you need more cars, okay, let's pump out some advertising. I get that. But, you know, kind of seeing behind the scenes on what that actually costs, a huge thing that I've done is listen to the phone calls and increase people's phone skills as far as getting the car in. So that's really, really an important part of this, I think.
Thanks so much for that. Do you see loyalty or rewards programs working?
Not that I know of. I don't think they're great. You know, I think there's some return programs that we can do, you know, prepaid oil changes, packages, VIP programs for customers that are already in. I see that working pretty well. We do that pretty successfully. But honestly, I'm not really sure. Thank goodness there's smart operations and marketing people around me that could probably tell you that a little bit better.
Retention. What are you guys doing for that?
One of the best things that you can do for retention is a personal relationship and, you know, giving someone a shop tour, telling someone about your background and your history and developing a bond with them. You know, we always say, if you bought a new house and you had your buddy over, what's the first thing you would do? You would give them a nickel tour. You'd show them around the place. You'd be proud of it. Okay. So I think it starts when a customer is new, giving them a tour. You need to know the environment that your car is in. There's not some greasy, dark, terrible shop back here with, you know, pictures of ladies in bikinis on the wall. It's an incredible environment with modern equipment and top-notch people. Let me show you around. We're very proud of it. This is a big part. I don't want to get into too much. I actually wrote a blog on this, but I think one of the biggest problems with retention is we advertise and we bring in a loss leader, right? An oil change customer. And then we try to sell them all this work and we're surprised when they don't buy it. They're an oil change customer. You're not their mechanic. They're not a repair customer yet. So before we do that, let's convert them, right? Let's tell them that we actually want to become their mechanic. And we like to train our guys that you can't bring someone in for an oil change and expect them to make the decision on the spot to become your mechanic. It's a big decision choosing a mechanic, a doctor, an accountant, someone to do your taxes, anything. So, you know, we like to ask them, we'd like to invite you in multiple times for a low-risk opportunity to experience our service so you can decide if you would like us to become your full-time mechanic. I want to earn your trust. I realize that's going to take some time. And then we try to sell them a prepaid, very inexpensive maintenance package when we cash the customer out, you know, 3 to 5 prepaid oil changes. And we can be very low pressure. You know, once someone buys that and we know they're coming back 3, 4, 5 times, it's just about relationship building. After that, you become their mechanic, and then you can start seeing your ARO grow and doing all the things. But we do really well on retention, and we track our new and our return customers every month. But Aspen has dynamite repeat customers. I'm really, really proud of that.
Walk me through staffing. Do you need a greeter? Do you need service advisor? How many service advisors per tech? What's your recommendations?
you know, more service advisors per tech than you need, than you think you need. And that, you know, to really provide top-notch service, you need more front staff horsepower than you think that you need. One time someone said, you know, you have one advisor for every two technicians in this store. That's crazy. Well, if you look at their day, they're very, very busy. We're not trying to process people in our company. We're trying to relationship build. I need a service advisor to take 15 minutes and show a customer around the place. Take 15 minutes and go sit down in the waiting room and talk about the weather or the football team or whatever it is. Have that tickler file. Call people back. You know, we ask a lot of them. The problem with answering that question is, you know, some technicians are literally like a couple of technicians, right? We have technicians that are equivalent to two or three guys. They're that efficient. They're that fast, great attitudes. And we have other technicians that we love and they're solid and they do very high quality work, but the, you know, they're not going to be able to produce the same amount of hours. And there's a place for that too. But I would just answer that question with more service advisors than you think.
Hey, did anyone ever have unlimited confidence in you?
Three people that I can actually think of. My wife, my dad, and Greg Bunch. Those three, whether it's true or not, my impression is that they have unlimited confidence in me and support whatever I do.
Is focus easy for you?
Yes. That's kind of my thing, mental discipline. I'm pretty focused. I tend to focus on one thing, attack it, do it very well until it's done before I like to move on to something else. I can multitask, but it's not, I'm not going to say it's an extreme strength. Greg and I have, you know, done a lot of reading and personality books and the way people think just to, you know, try to help each other understand each other. And we've always got along well, but when you learn things, it makes it even easier. And one thing that we've discovered is, you know, Greg is a visionary. And I'm an integrator. And we read a book, I think it was called Rocket Fuel, that says, you know, every integrator won't go anywhere without a visionary, and a visionary can't get anything done without an integrator, so they're a good team. But part of that is how we think. You know, I think very probably linear, and he thinks circular. You know, he's able to think about many, many things at once. And I like to start something, do it really well, finish it, and move on to the next thing. So I would say discipline's pretty easy for me.
Hey, do you carve out time in your day to just think?
No, I would like to, but I will tell you the truth about one thing. I'm a bit of an insomniac. I have been for years, and I do a lot of thinking when I can't sleep. And maybe that's why I can't sleep. I don't know what came first, but a lot of my best, most creative ideas come in the middle of the night when I should be sleeping. And I spend a lot of time thinking at night.
Regret anything, Jason?
I don't regret much. I try not to look back too hard, too deeply. I would say if I regret one little thing, it's pretty minor, is I was a pretty solid, good hockey player in high school and had an opportunity to maybe pursue that and chose not to. And all these years later, it would be pretty impossible. That's just a minor, minor regret of mine. I don't have any major regrets.
You still playing pickup hockey anywhere?
No. I've had some people that have tried to encourage me. And, you know, I take my daughters ice skating from time to time, and they just think it's so weird. You know, how can you skate that well? It doesn't look right. It's just weird because, you know, you're supposed to be the dad that's all wobbly on the skates, you know. But I don't think I would have the ability to play anymore.
Thanks, Jason. What's your passion beyond the shop?
My passion beyond the shop is definitely doing things with my family. Anyone that knows me, you know, would tell you I have a very, very close marriage. My wife and I are absolute best friends, and I know that that's a cliche, but we were best friends that hung out together before we ever had a relationship. And our whole relationship's built on that. But we live in Colorado, and we love the outdoors. We have four-wheelers. We go four-wheeling. We like to be outside. We like to go up and rent a cabin, do hiking, do snowshoeing. That's definitely a passion of ours.
Let me ask you a final question, and it's a loaded one. I'm a service advisor. I'm struggling. I heard about you. I picked up the phone, and I said, hey, listen, I know you're a busy guy. In 2 minutes, tell me what I got to do to be better at what I do for a living.
Well, the first thing I would probably tell you is I would like to listen to some of your phone calls and get you into sales training. I really think that I can help somebody. I have a core 7-class program that I can help almost anybody. But I would have to interview that person because, Carm, the reasons that people struggle are all over the map. But you know what it mostly is? Mentality. It's believing that you can, but it's knowing that certain things are okay. Here's what a lot of service advisors that do call me with just that problem say is, right, they believe that I'm a service advisor, not a salesperson. I don't respect salespeople. It has a negative connotation in society. It's a bad word. I'm never going to sell. You can't make me. I tell the person what they need. I tell them how much it is. I give them my advice, and that's that. And if they say no, that means, and you continue to talk, I'm a high-pressure salesman, and I'll never, ever do that.
Okay, well, that's getting in their way. Their mindset's getting in their way of change.
Their mentality is in the way. It's not 100% their fault, right? A lot of it is the culture that they've been exposed to. But the other part is they don't know that there's 3 miles of space in between just being a technical-minded service advisor, showing people what they need, telling them the price, and that's that, and being a high-pressure salesperson. It's not one or the other. They think it's one or the other. So when we actually teach them subtle, very subtle techniques on how to live in that middle ground, we are never going to allow some high-pressure salesperson in our company. We've had people that have gone down that road and they were fired, quite honestly. But we're never going to allow someone that doesn't understand that they're a salesperson. That job is a salesperson. And why do you think that that's a bad word? Let's break that down. That would be step number one.
Man, have I learned a lot from you.
Well, I appreciate it.
Where do you get this perpetual energy here?
I have a passion for sales and for service writing. And I'll tell you, here's where the energy comes from. Most of my energy draining things have been removed. This is a hard business. And the sales part of it is emotionally gratifying and fun. And we can go in the back and we can high five and we can, you know, have a little higher paycheck every single week. And it's just so much fun. But we like to say, you know, after you make the sale, the work begins, right? And we have to communicate with the technician. We have to, you know, deal with the parts and maybe the part comes in wrong and making sure the deadline. And, you know, that is where it gets really tough. And I have been so fortunate, and I thank a lot of people that have been around me, especially Greg, they've kind of removed that part of it away. So I can live in the emotionally gratifying, most fun part of the automotive business.
Great to spend some time with you. Jason Servideo, the Vice President of Transformers Institute, Colorado Springs, Colorado. Thank you for bringing your passion to the Remarkable Results Radio podcast.
Thanks for having me, Carm. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Jason Servideo, for so many great insights. You shared your wisdom on the who, what, why, and how of sales advisor training. The episode's talking points are at remarkableresults.biz/E263. It's an honor to interview people like Jason Servideo who are so willing to give up their insights to give you the inspiration to find your high watermark for sales training. Hey, no doubt my assurance stands. Listen to learn just one thing. I'm positive you did. Now, don't forget to implement it. Thanks for being here to show your support. Glad you enjoy. Thanks for listening hard. Talk soon.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.